Hello, good morning, and thanks for joining us. Our number, of course, is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. If you prefer email, that's just fine. Do it. So in the next hour, I want to talk about the peak of pessimism. And if you will, you know, again, tipping point, it's been kind of my buzzword, if you will, this year. It just feels that way, doesn't it? Politically and in so many different things that the lunacy has gone so far and so loud and so angry that really there's like this apology for mass murders in Chicago every single weekend. But if something happens somewhere else, it's like this horrific, unbelievable thing. All of these things have gone so far. Like the border is really not a problem. All of these things politically feel like it's a tipping point. But markets have that too, where you reach a point where things are so negative all the time. And it's really called the peak of pessimism. You just get this where it's like it can't get better. So the market does what? It gets better. And I say, it can't get better. It can't get worse. Sorry, set up completely backwards. It can't get worse out there. And then so the market seems to somehow get better. It happens all the time. And you hear the headlines coming out, right? Consumer confidence has never been worse. A perfect reflection of how we all feel. How can it get better with Joe in the White House? How can it? All of his policies are wrong. Okay, but his policies, his path, if you will, for the United States, which I believe the last polling data said 80% of Americans think we're on the wrong track. 80. I don't really know who the 20 are. Okay. Yeah, I do. They're the progressives. At least whatever percentage progressives are. I don't think most normal people admit that they're progressive because it means you hate America. You want to fundamentally ruin America. So most people don't talk about it. They cover it up with all kinds of other things. Well, I'm just a, you know, progressive on social issues or something, you know. I love this. This happened at a dinner party one time, not that long ago. I don't think they listen to the show, so it's okay. But it's like we're having this discussion. It's like, and the discussion gets a little amped up about, you know, some of the LGBTQ plus, what is the plus, and all of this stuff, and three bathrooms and all this stuff. Well, it turned out, I didn't really know, none of us did, that they were pretty liberal. And so, and we're like, but what about this and this and this and that? You know, and it's like, and so then when there's really not an answer, what kind of answer do you get? Something like this. Well, my sister's gay. So I feel a little differently about things. It's like, I got no answer. I mean, well, my niece is like with this. What are we going to one up on? Because now I understand better. Okay. It's a lot of times that's what we get into, right? We get into these arguments. Also, same thing about the financial markets. We do the same thing. We do the exact same thing. When there's really like, no reason why government should take over a certain area because now they're going to ruin it. And we all know they will. It's not a question of can they pull it off this time. Everybody knows. There's nothing, no problem that government solves better. Nobody goes, wow, I just can't wait for the government to show up and fix the problems we have. I mean, even the loony left doesn't believe that. So it's just one of those things that we get stuck sometimes, and we get stuck in the markets the same exact way. Well, I think we ought to go this direction with that, and I've been reading about this, and I've been doing this, and we get stuck. inflation bad or interest rates this and all, and we go on and we do what? Well, my sister's gay. End of discussion. I got nothing else, right? Well, that's just not true. I just don't like markets, all right? That's the answer when people don't have an answer. Is an answer that ends the conversation. I don't want to talk anymore. So, because nobody's listening anyway. We do it all the time. And when we get to the peak of pessimism, there's a lot more of that kind of noise. I mean, you get this call, if you will, like right now. We're getting this call that's coming in, boom, 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 all the time, that corporate earnings estimates are way too high. They've got to come down. And they've got to come down. And you've heard this to the point they're sounding shrill when they talk about this. Like, the corporations don't know at all what they're talking about. Their earnings are going to be way off what the estimates are. And analysts have no idea what in the world's going to happen. But these commentators do. And they out-commentate each other, or out-shrill each other for the idea that something's wrong. Like the corporate profits, which feeds into, again, this whole negativity loop. Consumer confidence is down. My buddy's not doing so good. I know this family. How can things get better? That's the feeling. And when you reach a point where it feels like it can't get better, it just does. Because markets are reacting in anticipation of future events, not today's events. Very rarely does the market move. I mean, it might move down because the Federal Reserve said something shocking at this moment. It might move down if we have an invasion that day that was not expected. But this latest one was expected. We think the market reacts day to day to actual news going on, and it's not. Or some kind of squiggly line on a chart. It's not. These are real corporations making profits, investing in the future, R&D, all of those things. And when they come up with killer products like the 15-year-old iPhone, 15 years old. Think of what has changed in the last 15 years alone. One product. Stunning. Stunning. What's the next super earth-shaking product? I don't know. There's lots of people out there are guessing. But here's the cool thing. There's trillions of dollars being spent every year on the next cool thing. Now, it may not think it's an iPhone thing, but it's an everything, right? It's I'm going to improve the automobile so much. I'm going to make a flying car. I'm going to do this. I'm going to make a battery that will go 1,000 miles. Trillions of dollars being spent to make our lives better, cleaner, easier. It's what they do every single day. Every day. And we do it day in and day out, year after year, no fanfare. Just company by company. And what is really interesting to me is that there's actually a group of people out there that don't want companies to do this. They think the government ought to do this. I'm left just flabbergasted at the history of all of the amazing things that come out of Cuba, Venezuela, the Soviet Union, North Korea. The list goes on of government-controlled everything. Why aren't they inventing anything? If that's anything at all, we ought to be doing. It's amazing. But individually, companies trying to do great things are spending enormous amounts of money, sometimes in collaboration, like they did when they came up with the vaccine, but most of the time just independently. Actually, are you ready? Trying to kill each other. Because I want the product, because I want the billion-dollar prize, right? It's amazing. But we just roll through all this as if there can be some control, when the best control or best path forward always is maximum freedom. Less government, maximum freedom, and we run into this fight all the time. I have to say this before we go to a break, and I want to introduce this a little bit. That our sponsor, one of our sponsors here, is Bryce Gosner. And Bryce is this bright young man who we've been using for mortgages and things like that. And you've heard he's been sponsoring for a long time. But with interest rates moving so much, we wanted to talk with Bryce for a few minutes. So I want to tee that up here. After this commercial break, we're going to have just a quick little 5 minutes of what's going on in the mortgage market. Jennifer Stone interviewed him. And then, of course, in the next hour, we're going to be live and coming back to all of this. We're going to come back all the way into and talk more deeply about the peak of pessimism, because we're most certainly in that. And I know it's just a killer. Man, just reading the Wall Street Journal today, and I've got a couple articles to point out too, it just goes to that effect. All right, so we'll be right back, top of the hour, with Money Matters.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone with Bryce Gosner of Fulcrum Lending. He's going to give us a little bit of information on how they work, what makes them different. They are one of the sponsors of our show, so we wanted to give him some time today to just tell us about him.
Perfect. Awesome. Jennifer, glad to be here. I grew up here in Boise and got into the lending industry 2019, so it was kind of a really good time to get in. Went to a couple different institutions. I was at a retail lender and I was at an FDIC insured bank. And what a lot of people don't know is banks, you know, they make their money by charging the secondary market a certain number of, you know, basis points, or a secondary investor. And that's how they make their profit on the back end. What I continued to see was that these institutions were charging a lot of money and we didn't have competitive interest rates. So I was trying to build a book of business. And, you know, as I started to learn a little bit more on how banks make money and kind of the stuff that goes on the back end, I realized, wow, the rates that we're giving, although they were, you know, very low with, you know, everything that was going on in the environment, they were still higher than the average, right? And I felt like some of the fees were a little unfair to people purchasing homes. It's usually the biggest purchase of their life. And so I started to, you know, go down different rabbit holes, right? And that's how I found, you know, the brokerage route. Idaho tends to trail a little bit with certain industries, real estate, I think, being one of them. And eventually, you know, ended up with Fulcrum Home Loans and running their Meridian branch. And again, the average retail investor, retail bank, FDIC insured bank, will charge anywhere between, you know, 310 to 350 basis points per conventional loan. The average broker charges about 250 basis points. And Fulcrum, we charge 200 basis points. And so all that means to anybody, you know, listening is that because we charge less and because we have substantially less overhead, our underwriting staff doesn't work for us, our funding staff, our servicing department, we have such less overhead that we don't have to charge as much as those bigger banks. We get a lot less, lot lower interest rates, lower than the national average, and a lot lower lender fees. And so that's good for, you know, most consumers.
Sure. So you charge a flat fee, is that correct?
Correct. And it really depends on which brokerage, which lender we go to. Typically, we use United Wholesale Mortgage, who's the largest servicer to Fannie Mae, and they have a $1,055 underwriting fee. So that's flat. You know, a couple of the other lenders we use are around like $1,050, $1,090 bucks. And that's it. So unless the borrower wants to buy down the rate, it's a flat fee every single time, regardless of, you know, whatever the loan amount is, $100,000 or $1,055,000.
Wow. To me, that's crazy, because you think about how the world's changed so much, right?
Right.
Brokers, we look at brokers for insurance, we look at brokers for everything, but we never thought to use it for lending on homes. You always went to your local credit union,
right,
who you have a relationship with, right?
Yep, exactly.
Right. So when we heard about this, we thought it's a huge deal for clients going forward. You may have to pay $1,055 up front, but when you get that lower rate, you pay so much less at the end.
Exactly. Yeah. And a lot of consumers, right? I mean, 30% of consumers just want the best deal. And so they'll go with Chase, they'll go to a credit union, they'll go shop out all these different banks. And that's the beauty of going to, you know, Fulcrum. We can do all that for you. You don't have to go reapply. You don't have to get your credit pulled multiple times. We'll figure out what's the best product for you with our 15 or so different broker channels. And then we'll, you know, plug and play with that option. So it's kind of a one-stop shop.
So what have you seen now? Obviously, we all know rates have gone up substantially.
Right.
Are you guys busy, slowing down? Has the market changed significantly for you?
Yeah. I mean, we're unfortunately, and there's no, you know, there's a lot of evidence in the news where, you know, Wells Fargo and other larger mortgage companies are laying off a lot of people. And that tends to happen when, you know, the mortgage industry triples in size very quickly, right? There's eventually going to be a slowdown. There's going to be layoffs. So we haven't had to do any of that, which is awesome. We're slower than we were at this time last year, but people are continuing to come in. We establish ourselves very well, and that we're very purchase driven. So we hone in on real estate and realtor relationships. So we're not living off a book of refinances. It's all about giving value to real estate agents, and that's what a lot that I do on social media is try to, you know, educate them and help provide for them. But yeah, I mean, you know, year over year, mortgage applications, purchase applications are down. That's a known fact.
Sure.
A lot of people are still trying to come to Idaho, you know, from other states and, you know, et cetera. But yeah, it's definitely slowed down with the rising interest rates and just kind of given the overall macro economy right now.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me though, when you think about rates, right? They're still so much lower than when I bought my first house.
Yeah.
So when people say they're high, well, compared to they're high, but they're exactly not that high versus what they've been in the past.
Exactly. No, I completely agree with that. I think a lot of people got used to sub 3% interest rates, but we're in a very tricky time right now where we're experiencing very high levels of inflation on top of, you know, very high interest rates. And so it's a weird time, but overall we're continuing to do well.
Perfect. Perfect. So if someone wants to get a hold of you,
yeah,
how do they do that?
So you know, they could go to just our website, you know, for Fulcrum Home Loans. They could find me on social media. I do a ton of stuff that talks about real estate lending, a little bit in crypto. And that's just Bryce _ Gonser, Gonser. Or again, probably the easiest way is just our website.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, Bryce, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436-580-KIDO. That's our number. Dave@petsofinancial.net. And of course, like I say, these are my opinions and my opinions only, and we're not here to tell you what to buy or sell. We're here to educate, period. And we will use different sectors and stocks as, hopefully, great examples of what people do. Great stories. I mean, they're fantastic stories. 15 years the iPhone's been around. 15 years Apple's gone up 40-fold since the iPhone. In other words, the product is out. It's in hand. You don't have to come up with some whole new thing like a Bitcoin. You don't have to have Google or Microsoft at the IPO. They can already be a big deal company. One of the greatest income stories never told is a 100-year-old soap company paying dividends in 1970 of 1 penny per share per quarter, now at 80 cents. Nothing on the planet pays 80-fold income. Said nothing about the stock price. It's a soap company, for crying out loud. The only other people to do things like that would be a Band-Aid company like Johnson & Johnson. Band-Aids and much more. 3M, which makes all kinds of stuff, not just Post-it notes. Big companies have big stories, and that's not at all from the beginning. They're all big stories to become big companies in the first place. But we know who they are. And you don't have to catch them early on. That's the beauty of markets. It's a stunning beauty of markets. Amazing. And we just blow past this. Like, we got to, what's the market going to do today? And so on and so forth. So a couple of things real quick, though, before I get into this peak of pessimism that just feels like to me, right? Because there's the Wall Street Journal today, front page, I kid you not, front page, 100,000 cars this quarter alone are sitting there at General Motors. That's just General Motors. Not Ford, Toyota, all of them combined. Just General Motors, 100,000 waiting for chips. Okay, why is that a big story? Because we're going to solve that problem. And then we'll have a flood of cars. So if you want to buy a car cheap, wait. They're coming. The chips are coming. Okay? And then imagine this. It's not like they're stopping making cars. They keep making cars. They park them. Now they're going to run out and put a chip in them and send them off to the dealers. Okay? And then they're going to have a zillion cars on their lot. Car prices are coming down. For sure. No, I can't guarantee it. Feels like a for sure to me. 100,000 alone from General Motors. Just in this quarter. Just in this quarter. Now, here's the banner headline that is just absolutely, just this is the counter, to the inflation one. The Biden administration is considering banning all drilling in the Pacific and the Atlantic. I kid you not. I kid you not. Can you imagine the tone-deaf nature of an administration that comes out with an announcement like that? I mean, you'd bury it. I doubt very much that that's the headline in the New York Times. Why? Because they're not dumb. Who does that in the middle of an energy crisis? Who would do that? I mean, talk about a message that would send oil prices up all over. We don't have the ability to just have everybody driving electric. We don't. We won't for a while. So what we want to do is we want to continue to allow Putin to have gobs and gobs of cash to do whatever he wants. Perfect. This is just today. Front page. I couldn't believe it. I had to share it with you. And also, if you get a chance, and I'm asked this once in a while, just to if you happen to see an article to mention it, I saw a brilliant piece today by Holman Jenkins. He's just one of their best editorial guys. It's called Hunter Biden and the Press, and Who's Really the Demon? Who's Really to Blame? And it's just a fascinating thought process of what's happened since Trump went into office. I think you'll very much enjoy the mental exercise of reading Holman Jenkins. He's truly a gem in writing. And I think, if you get a chance, you should find it out there somewhere on the internet. Holman Jenkins is the article in the Wall Street Journal today. Okay, good opinion piece. All right, let's move on. And Lyle, hang on. We'll catch you in the next segment. I want to talk a little bit about this here, the peak of pessimism. This doesn't market time for you, even if it'll get you close. There isn't a perfect measure of the peak of pessimism. It's just a feeling. But there's also got to be data, or it just could be, as they say, bad pizza. Okay? There's got to be honest, sincere thought behind it and data. Malcolm Gladwell had a great book called Blink. And in that, he talked about that instinct that people have, some have, of just like moving at the right time. Like when do you push the hostage taker to make the decision that he could wipe out everybody in the room or give it up? The suicide jumper. There's people that have that gift. Here's the danger, though. Because people think that after reading the book, it was very fascinating. I happened to be sitting at a table at lunch with him talking about this book at a speaking engagement. And he was answering a question about the book. And he said, people think I was writing about the fact that people have these instincts. Very few do. And it's incredibly dangerous when people think they do and they don't. That's when people die. Not everybody has it. And that's the point of the book. That's the point of Blink. That's also the point I'm making now when we think of this. Oh, I have this feeling when markets are at the top or at the bottom. No, you don't. You got to have data. You got to have this. And then you can have all of this experience all put in this mash, and you might have this idea that we're getting to the peak of pessimism. We got to be honest with ourselves. There's no way this gets the bottom of the market. But when we are so negative, and there's things like consumer confidence, all-time lows. And now fill in the blank. Of course, right, it's President Joe. Again, Wall Street Journal today, this is how unbelievably bad they are. Like, this is the time to announce that we're not going to do any more drilling. Oh, you got to be kidding me. There isn't a better time, like, a few months down the road. There isn't a better time right now than let's go drill with the idea that over the next 15 or 20 years, we're going to be drilled out of business. Why? Because we have transitioned in the greenest possible way. It's a lot greener than giving Putin money to drill for oil. But this administration won't change its mind. Consumer confidence continues to flag. How much lower can it go than an all-time low? It can keep going down, but the point is this is another reason to say we're at the peak of pessimism. Headlines this week. This is the worst six-month start for Wall Street in 50 years. I mean, you'd think, wow, my gosh, this is like Armageddon out there. Okay, I get reporting is off the charts. It's exciting. We got to make it sound worse than ever. This is not 08. We don't have a financial crisis. We have a confidence crisis. That's what we have. We have supply chains. This won't fix. We have inflation. It won't get any better. Yeah, it will. Cure to high prices is high prices. Consumers are slowing down their spending, which is a cure to high prices, isn't it? Yeah, but we don't want to slip into a recession, looking more and more likely. It's possible, but it's also looking more likely to be very, very mild if it is. In other words, a technical recession, not really any different, except a couple percentage points, from something that is so slow growth that it would feel like a recession. Borders in complete chaos. People are dying every day. Drugs are coming across the border in unreal amounts. Totally get it. There's probably a whole bunch of terrorists, too. There undoubtedly are. Why wouldn't you come in that way? It's easy. You walk across, and you've got this administration to cover you up. These are all problems. We can all go on, and you can list more. But when we think about the peak of pessimism and what that means, and what it means data-wise, is when consumer confidence is low. I'm not even going to give you the numbers of how good the market does on average the next 3 years because it's too high to believe. But we're not low. We're at the all-time low. In other words, when consumer confidence is high, the market does bad. When consumer confidence is low, the market does well going forward. What? It makes your head explode, doesn't it? No, because you got to understand this. Consumers are wrong. The average person is wrong. People don't understand how markets work. They don't. They think today's news is important. It is not. 99% of the news today has already been priced in. It's completely irrelevant, and what you know isn't worth knowing, and I know you don't want to put that in your pipe and smoke it, but do. We've got to understand, we don't know anything that everybody doesn't already know. And therefore, it's priced in. It's not saying you're stupid. It's saying you're really wise to understand that you don't know the future. You can't know the future. I would call that wisdom, not being dumb. It's being wise. It's walking with an air of, it's going to be okay. I don't know fully how, but it's going to be okay. And we're seeing this soup coming together, this of pessimism from consumer confidence. And looking forward, when we understand the data, this is a really, really strong, like 100% indicator of future market. Not next week. This is where we miss. I don't want to buy Amazon down 35%. It might go down 37%. Yeah, it could. It doesn't make you wrong to buy a couple percent early. It makes you rich. We don't get the bottom, and that's the fight. This is the internal struggle we have. Like, I don't want to buy today and find out it's worth less tomorrow. I know. I don't either. That's how it works, though. I just bought a real estate company. Don't want to talk about who they are. For what I thought was a bargain price, and it's 10% less now. So the yield of the shares I have went up by a bunch, and I'm reinvesting the dividends quarterly, so I guess that's okay. So instead of yielding 7%, which it was, it's now yielding 7.7. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. It might yield 8 tomorrow. It might. But I think there's great value in the real estate that's there. To me, these are amazing opportunities in this time that won't be there for long. It feels like the peak of pessimism is here, is coming soon. We're near it. I don't know. It doesn't mean that something else can't go wrong, and that's where the humility has to come into play. But to be looking at the market like you're going to get further signs that prices can't go down anymore. Prices will already be a lot higher. That's what happens always. Always. When I think about it every single day and I see headlines and this analyst and JP Morgan and, you know, and the people at Citicorp and blah, 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 blah. Merrill Lynch thinks. They parrot each other. And it's all negative all the time. And I'm not going to say all, because there are lots of people out there now that have plenty of time. And you know what? They've got it made. They're there. It's all done. And they're free to have an opinion. They're not new to this. And they also know that sometimes they're wrong. I may be wrong. But it feels like this is a great point to be buying the great corporations of the world at the peak of pessimism, particularly when it comes to consumer confidence. It may go lower tomorrow. But I wanted to share statistically and the feeling you have and the gut reaction that this is the peak of pessimism. This is what it feels like. This is what John Templeton talks about. It can't get any better. And it does. It just does. All right. That's not a market prediction for tomorrow, by the way, folks. It is not. But it feels pretty good out there to me. It feels like there's some bargains that are just not going to be around for a long time. Lyle, hang on. I got to take a quick break here, and you're up to bat next, and we've got four lines available at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome. Thanks for joining us. Wow, I just thought of another one, too, during the break here about another one of those indicators of the peak of pessimism. Now, I'll come back to that later, but we've had a very patient caller. Lyle, thank you for holding forever. You go ahead, please.
Hey, you know what, Dave? As long as I'm listening to you, I could stay on hold for a long time. So don't worry about it.
Hey, thank you, sir.
I'm sorry I missed your birthday, because that's in my opinion that was a great day for people in talk radio. So here's my couple of questions. A while back, that big hubbub over GameStop. People were jumping in, making a few bucks, jumping out, jumping back in. I was listening to a guy the other day talking about some online, it was an app he used. So if a stock dropped below its trading range, he'd jump in. And then he would set a sell if the stock rose a couple $5 over its trading range. Mm-hmm. And this guy acted like, on a weekly, if not daily basis, he was buying at a dip and selling at a pop. And I just wonder, after that GameStop, mania, I wonder how many thousands of people are out there not investing but speculating. And do you think there's enough of those people that are causing these swings in the market?
Yeah, good question, Lyle. And the answer is no, they're not. They're wiped out periodically, because it sounds easy, and you can also even show charts and graphs to show certain periods of time where a stock will trade in a range or just outside of that range, buy here, sell here, and you can just keep clipping this couple of bucks all the time, right? And it's so funny, because as you were talking, I pulled out this chart to kind of show the what people do when we're talking about climate change, right? Particularly, and I believe me, this ties together. And it's this period of time where, if you go back to the 1920s, which you always, of course, should, and you look at fires and other such disasters, whether it's hurricanes, cyclones, things like that, if you go back over a long period of time, 100 years, we're not in a high time at all. But what they do is they take and they show you that the forests are on fire, we're burning up more than ever. It's got to be because of global warming. That's got to be it, and drought. And that's true if you look at the last 30 or 40 years. It's up a little bit more than it was, say, in the 1960s. If you go all the way back to 1926, we're at one-fifth of what it was at the peak in the 1920s. Literally one-fifth. In other words, let's take this chart and go all the way back. And so all the way through the first part of the century, because weather, I don't know whether you want to believe it or not, weather changes over decades, not over a week or two, right? And so over the first part of this century, we burned up. I mean, literally at five times the pace of 2017, which is always pointed at as a look how high it was in 2017. It was one-fifth of what the record was in the 1920s. So it's one of those stunning things. And the same thing is true of hurricanes. It depends. And the same thing is true in the financial markets when people take these time frames and they show you, for example, this goes back probably about 5 to 10 years ago, okay, because I talked about it a lot during our recovery out of 08. So people are always focused on this one chart. They're showing this is how much debt there is, and it's a straight-up spike in debt. And it was in cars. So that's consumer debt, and they would focus on this one chart on cars. Next chart, please, which shows all consumer debt, is a straight-down decline. So if you're doom and gloom crowd, or you're trying to sell people on your program for getting in and out, that's what they do, is they'll take a time frame and show you a clip of how it works. Here's why it doesn't work. Stop losses, or you take money out. I mentioned this before and talk about this with Apple. And Peter Lynch puts it another way. You need to have 10 baggers in your lifetime to have good investment results. If you would have traded Apple and not owned it for the last 15 years since they invented the iPhone, you don't make 40-fold your money. You made a little bit and you're out. And you're out and you're out and you're out. And the other problem with that, and the reason why you need to have some of those, because you're not always right. You're not always right. I've got stocks. I've had stocks that went to near zero that I was happy to get 10 cents for. I mean, you know why? Because it's a great day when you got something back off the table. I sold it for a dollar. I bought it for 10. And you're like, oh, God. But then because you just know it's going to zero. And that happens. And you go, so what? I got 40-fold on Apple. I can't lose at this game, right? So, and that's what the S&P and all that is all about. You don't have to go buy individual stock. You buy the S&P, for example, and you're buying all the Apples and Googles and Microsofts and the GameStops that are going away. You're buying the, if you will, the Enron and WorldCom that go to zero and poof, all the capital's gone. You're buying General Motors and Ford that haven't done anything for 50 years, and you still go up by a lot, 10% a year. We all know, right? Because you've listened to the program for a while. So you know it's 10. And that's all part of it. And that isn't easy to game because the market would game it before it ever happened. And I think our logic tells us that. If the market knew, if this really worked, it would stop working because all systems do because everybody then outplays the system. There was a time when you could buy any beaten down small cap stock at the end of the year, knowing after the tax loss selling was over, January would probably be pretty good, and odds were 80-90% in your favor. You're going to make quick, easy money. So people started doing it in October and then September, and then the game is up. It's gone, right? So that was a time also when it was more thinly traded. There's a lot of different things out there. So is that there? No. What's happening, though, is the machines are trading very quickly for pennies with billions of dollars, and that adds to volatility. And when volatility picks up, their trading activity picks up, and the noise out there picks up, which is what they're based on. The algorithms are sorting news items all day long. They operate differently, but let's just say, for example, whenever interest rates are mentioned positively, then we're going to buy, we're going to sell, and whatever you consider positive or negative changes all the time, right? Right. So if you hear a Fed governor speak, boom, 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 the computer's like instantly on it, and they tend to trade in unison. It flies for a little bit on no fundamental reason, and then it changes directions. And that's typically what you're seeing moment to moment. Can people do swing trading? Sure. There's nothing wrong with people buying a high quality stock. It pops in maybe a bear market type rally, and they may say, I'm just going to take some chips off the table. It's okay. I really don't know that I wanted to hold that company, but it was high quality, and if I got stuck with it, I'd be fine. But you're going to get blown out. You're wrong. The market goes down, and then it goes down and goes down and goes down, and you bought it just below that particular $50 line, whatever it was you traced, and then there's a $50, and now it's 45, and it's 40, and it's 35, because fundamentally that company's changed. You were wrong. You never did your homework. You did numerology. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I'm fine with market volatility. I've been dealing with it for almost 40 years, so I'm not like the kids that are freaking out. But my problem is in regards to when you hear reports of the average 50-year-old has $10,000 in his retirement account, and doesn't matter if it's liberal or conservative, the average 50-year-old, 10 grand. My concern, and I may have discussed this with you before, my concern is when the federal government looks at the 401ks, the IRAs and such, and says, you know what, why are we giving Social Security to this schmuck who's been saving money for 50 years? If we say you want Social Security, you turn over your 401k, your IRA, and we'll guarantee you your monthly payment. The average 50-year-old would jump at that chance. They're giving up 10 grand, but the guys who have been shopping at thrift stores and, you know, buying markdown groceries for 50 years and have put away a comfortable nest egg, they're going to be in a pinch. You know, it's a wash between what I've got versus what I've been promised from Social Security. My concern is I think there'd be widespread cheering by the masses. Take, because that guy, he unfairly profited from his investments. He needs to be either into Social Security or he needs to take his nest egg and walk away.
Yeah.
And that's a huge concern for me.
Well, so far we haven't. And Lyle, there's a number of points that came up and we got to run. But thank you for your call and a number of great points you have. I will say this. So far, Nancy Pelosi has tried twice to raise this as a trial balloon and was booed vastly by the public. So far, so good. The average person doesn't believe the government has a better solution to their retirement needs than saving on their own. That's not everybody. There are loony people out there all over the place that think it'll end good. They already are. Medicare tax is three times, Medicare premiums are three times as much for people who have their own individual means. That's nothing more than a tax on them saving and investing appropriately, building great businesses, amassing quotes of fortune. And so therefore they pay three times as much as people at the lower end of the scale out of their Social Security. So they're already taking Social Security away from people who are earning more. All right, thanks a lot, Lyle. Appreciate it. I got to take a quick break here. Bob, you're up to bat next. Fox News is next. We will be right back with Money Matters. Hello, welcome. Happy 4th of July. Happy 246th 4th of July to this great nation. Wow. The light on a hill, beacon to the world, the great hope of the world. That's what we are. That's what we've been. Through all of the flaws and imperfections that human beings are, it's what we are. We are the beacon to the world. I've said this so many times in different ways, but it's just a stunning sliver, small sliver of the population. Does its best to protect the world against tyrants, encourage freedom, lift up after every natural disaster or unnatural disaster, like dictators. And yeah, we're flawed because we're human. And we are the hope of the world. We create everything virtually with a tiny fraction of the population of the world. This American experiment is truly stunning. Truly stunning. I hope we continue to fight the good fight. Let's go to the phones. Bob, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
My understanding is that if we're to beat inflation, interest rates have to be higher. So why is Mr. Powell taking the baby steps? Why can't we attack it more aggressively? Is it policy, or is it he just doesn't know what he's doing?
Well, doing it all at once would have been a bold move, and I wanted him to do that. You've probably heard me say that. Just look, if we want to go to 3%, go to 3. Just go to 3. Just do it. You can go ahead and tell people we're going to do it, or we're going to do it over a 2-3 month period. Just get it done, you know? Even if you just like 1% for 3 months. We just think we want to get there. We were slow at starting. It would have been better if we said that. We should have started earlier. And so we're going to play catch up. We should have been at 2% right now. We're going to go to 2. They should have just, because then they could have done that. And yes, it would have shocked the market for a day. And then the market would have gone, okay, we're where we would have been. Instead of this death by 1,000 cuts, why don't we just go ahead and shoot. Go. Let's go hunt this beast. I agree with you. They should have done it, but they've never done it before. So I have to say that's why it was measured.
Well, if inflation is at 8%, that is a long way to go.
They're not going to go to 8.
Interest rates are supposed to be higher.
Yeah. They think that what they're going to do is they're going to settle in at what they think the market's true rate should be, right? And nobody knows what that is. Okay, it's a made-up number. We don't know. But right now, it seems to be right around 3 because you're seeing short-term rates and long-term rates floating right around 3. And so you're not seeing the yield curve steep
like inflation's going to stay here. It's not. It's flat. And people say, well, that indicates a recession. It can, and it does sometimes, and then sometimes it doesn't indicate anything like a recession. It's just that it's saying that rates are flat, and they are. And that is a prediction of the market, that interest rates, that inflation is coming down after this. Transitory, no. It's going to settle in at a higher level. It has to be fought now, or it's not only not transitory, it's permanent, high, and maybe run away. We have another issue, and it is also, in regards to this, I think it's a belief that this administration is willing to change directions, that they're not just stupid. Don't want to just say they're stupid, because they know what they're doing. They're intentionally making energy prices super high in our country for no reason at all, because it's not because of clean energy at all. We have the cleanest energy anywhere in the world. So bringing it across the ocean from great people like Putin does not make sense for our long-term solution. Drilling it here does. So they know what they're doing, but they won't change that course, which is politically weird to me. And that's kind of where we're stuck. But the market believes that energy prices are going to come down. It really does. I don't know. I'm not sure there's any evidence to show that this administration will allow one additional drilling permit ever. I just don't see it.
So what can we expect in looking at history, that there's a big change of the Senate and Congress in November? Will the market right away do something if there's a big change, or...
The market already is. The market already knows it's going to be a big change, because historically there has been. This guy polls at the lowest levels in history. That certainly can't be good for Democrats that have aligned for him. Trump won a lot of districts that are held by Democrats or barely lost. And this is, you know, hitching your post to Biden's administration is deadly, and we've seen that in every election since he was elected. So I really think that it's a foregone conclusion, although I get concerned that we are going to be like, wow, $5.25 gas nationally is, you know, gas prices are coming down. It's only $4.50 now. That's really good news. See, look at Joe's policies are working. Inflation has peaked. I think it probably has peaked. Because bad compared to horrifying isn't as bad. And that's where we are with inflation right now. We're at unbelievable levels, 40% on airline tickets. Hotel rooms are through the roof. Can't even get a rental car for 2x what it was 3 years ago. All of these things are true. Tank of gas is 1x, right? It's double. It's double the price, 2x, I guess. Double the price. These things are all real, but then all of a sudden that's our new world view. My concern is we go back and we say, hey, see, the policies are working. We've moved from $5 to $4.50. But that's kind of what we're seeing in a lot of different places. Do you think that when demand is destroyed because airline tickets are too high, prices will come back down? It doesn't mean they're cheap. It doesn't mean that policies are good. It means that inflation has peaked. It doesn't mean it's negative inflation or we're going back to where prices were. It means it's slowed down. That is what I expect to see literally in the next couple of months. Data is always lagging, and we need to run a couple months down the road to even see what today is, let alone what next month and the month after is. But we are slowing down in the economy, and supply chains are going to fix themselves. China's coming back online. There are a few positive things happening in spite of, and that's exactly why politics in the end doesn't matter. Joe and company will be dead and gone, or gone, and the economy will continue, and Apple will be making iPhones, and you and I will be buying them and loving them. And that's why you buy the great corporations of the world, because you're not buying the politics of the day. The market does react to this. The idea that we're going to have two more states, we're going to have 25 people, or is it 28, 58, let's go ahead and build a whole different legislative thing called the Supreme Court. It would destroy that jurisdiction. But right now we're in the heat of the moment. Everybody's mad. They're not mad necessarily, everybody, but enough people are mad. And it's hyperventilating. By the elections, I doubt that Roe v. Wade is going to be the issue. Because what we really saw was a court that did two things, for example, yesterday. One was pro-Biden's administration. Bring them in. They can come in. Why? Because they're not making policy. It's a legal decision on legislation. That's what their job is. And maybe in the end, that's what people want if they understood what the Supreme Court was all about. We'll see.
All righty.
Thanks
Thank you,
a
Dave.
Lot. Appreciate your call. Thanks, Bob. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Got to take a quick break. We will be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. Hey, we've got more stuff out there at petsofinancial.com. We've got our podcast. And also, of course, you can download those just on the Apple Store and others. But it just automatically feeds in, as you know, the podcasts do as we update them. Also, we have a YouTube channel out there, and it's getting more and more robust, if you will. We have more and more stuff coming out. Our Zoom meetings for our clients are there as well. So it's just all you have to do is to subscribe and to also say, yes, I want notifications, and they'll let you know when a new one is out if you choose to. But anyway, that's there out there. We're trying to put out as much information as we can. Now, I had one other thing before I grabbed Terry here that was really interesting to me. It popped in my head here at the commercial break about another of those peak of pessimism things. And I don't want to get too far in the weeds here, okay? I really don't. But you need to understand that volatility is an indicator of it, a big indicator. And as I've mentioned before, there's so many different things out there that are, well, we hear it all the time. You don't want to put your money in the Wall Street casino, blah, 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 blah. Well, if you want to have guarantees and you want to have things that are there to make sure you can't lose a certain amount or whatever, right? Because the market's never gone down more than 20% over a five-year period. All those types of things we talk about all the time. Like, never done that. So if you want, but you want to say, okay, I want to make sure if it goes down 30 over the next 5 years, I don't lose anything. You can do that. They're called structured notes, and they're guaranteed by the big banks, J.P. Morgan, et cetera. You can even have FDIC insurance. The more assurance you have, the more upside cap they put on it. But you can guarantee your downside. Well, these deals are going crazy, meaning you are getting better and better deals, more upside than where we were 6 months ago, by so much that, once again, this whole volatility thing is pointing towards the peak of pessimism. The option markets are pricing in unbelievable deals now. I've talked about them in the past few weeks, so I'm not going to go into it too much. But that's the kind of thing we're seeing right now with people getting 2-year notes that are 8% caps. We've never seen that. Meaning you can't lose anything. It's FDIC insured on the downside, but you could get 8% a year on the upside. Never seen that before. Not even close. And I've said this before on these equity indexed annuities that they pitch all the time. Those things are just, if you make 3% over your 10-year surrender charge period, because they charge you 10% commissions up front, you are only going to get 2 or 3. That's it. Ever. Why would you do this? It makes no sense. And we have a 3-year treasury now, or 3% 10-year treasury you can get if that's what you're just happy with. All right. That's enough of that. I just said it's another thing for that peak of pessimism. Terry, how are you? Thanks for holding.
Good morning, Professor. You keep throwing curveballs at me. I lost my train of thought there for a second.
Well, bring it back home for us.
Well, you were talking earlier about all the statistics that were going on, and I always had a cynical boss told me once that a successful pollster's first question is always to ask, what do you want me to prove for you?
Right. Yes.
Or it comes back to figures lie and liars figure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it always does. It depends on how you want to prove the data. I just think that I want data. I don't want your opinion of the data. Just give me the data.
Yeah. The real question I had, I just went back into debt for the first time here in 22 years. But your advertisers, you advertise a window company and whatnot. Are those your advertisers, or are those the KIDO's advertisers?
KIDO. We only have a couple sponsors, right?
Yeah.
Us and Bryce, you heard from earlier, is a great mortgage broker, and then Mountain West, and that's it. Those are our sponsors. The whole rest of the hour is a KIDO.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you probably knew I would not be having an annuity pimp do it. So there you go. Hey, Terry, I'm so sorry. I'm going to run out of time, my friend.
Yes, sir.
But thank you so much, and happy 4th of July to you. Thanks.
Good 4th to you, too, sir.
Thank you. And happy 4th of July to everyone. Have a great weekend.